I'm Bert Cohen, and it's time for Portside. Living in the USA means pressure from both sides that affects policy, sometimes good, sometimes not so good. And you may have missed Van Jones, the story about Van Jones. He still is a wonderful leader in the environmental movement, mixing environment and poverty and racism and mixing those all together. He was in the Obama administration, and he basically, I don't think it's too much of a stretch, maybe he physically got lynched, but his position, he got lynched by Fox News, also known as Faux News, F-A-U-X News, and it's quite an event for America, as well as for what it says about the Obama administration and extreme disruptive right-wingers like Glenn Beck. Well, I'm very pleased to have with us to talk about the Van Jones firing, Robert Shetterly, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks, Bert. Nice to be able to talk with you.
Well, sure. And you are in Maine right now, which is fairly close to where this is starting out. For the past 7 years, Robert Shetterly has been painting a series of portraits, now numbering over 140, called Americans Who Tell the Truth. What a great title. I'm interested in seeing the show. It's been traveling around the country for over 6 years and is scheduled to keep going. It's been all over the place, more than 20 states, including New York. In 2005, Dutton published a book of the portraits by the same name. And in 2006, the book won the top award of the International Reading Association for Intermediate Nonfiction. And he has also, Robert Shetterly has engaged in a wide variety of political and humanitarian work with many of the people whose portraits he's painted. He traveled to Rwanda in 2007 with Lily Ye and Terry Tempest Williams to work in a village of survivors of the genocide there. And much of his current work focuses on honoring and working with the activists trying to bring an end to the terrible practice of mountaintop removal by coal companies in Appalachia. I don't think that would be something that Van Jones would be in favor of supporting.
I don't think so.
Well, you've painted these portraits. You've had the opportunity to speak with people all over the country about the necessity of dissent in a democracy and how democracy cannot function if politicians don't tell the truth and the media doesn't report it. Well, we're here to talk about the forced resignation of Van Jones. And you've written about it because it fits into your series, Americans Who Tell the Truth. Tell us about how he fits with that portrait series.
Okay, I would love to do that. Bert, your voice sounds a little faint on my end of the phone. I would, if there's some way to crank it up a little bit, I would appreciate that. I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
Well, we'll see what we can do about that. Is that any better?
That's better.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I heard about Van Jones some years ago, long before he was, before Obama was elected and he was part of the administration. I had heard about him when he was in Oakland, California, and had founded the Ella Baker Center. By the way, Ella Baker is another person whose portrait I painted. She's no longer alive, but Van Jones was honoring her because she was one of the great civil rights leaders in this country who was almost totally unheralded. She was a person who by choice chose to be behind the scenes. I mean, she helped, she was a field organizer for the NAACP, and then she was helped Martin Luther King start the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and then she quit that because she thought the structure was too top-down and thought we needed more grassroots organizations, and she helped a lot of the young people who started SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee,
now, there's
in
some
the
history.
60s, organize that movement and voter registration in the South and things like that. Anyway, Van Jones wanted to honor her, and he used her name to begin his center in out in Oakland. And it began as really a kind of a police watch group. I mean, he was concerned about poor minority people being harassed and beaten up by cops and wanted to represent these kids. And then, you know, at each level of his development, Van Jones seems to have sort of taken a wider and wider picture and then tried to engage it in some positive way. I mean, when he saw what was happening to young people, poor young people living in in high crime and high drug and poor family and low education and a lot of despair situations, he realized that just by doing something about the way police treated these kids was not going to solve the problem, that the problem was poverty and education and jobs and housing and healthcare and all those big things, and that he really needed to engage at that level. And so that was what Ella Baker became about. And then he also was becoming increasingly aware of environmental issues, and particularly climate change. And he thought, being the kind of visionary he is, that there was a solution here that could solve maybe several of these problems at once, and that was to bring the manufacturers of big environmental green products like solar panels and windmills and geothermal devices and all that kind of stuff, you know, have them put their plants right in the poorest areas so that you would then give poor people good jobs and you would educate them for those jobs, and then you would solve not only the local problems, because as you raise people's income, everything else would change with it. I mean, the despair would lift, the housing would improve, the education would improve, you know, community dynamics would change completely, and they would be making a product which would be helping to solve the environmental problem. So anyway, that's the kind of thinking that Van Jones does, and that was when I heard about him and realized the kind of work he was doing and how important this was to connect, all these different aspects of our social, cultural, and environmental problems and try to solve them in a comprehensive way. That's why I chose to paint a portrait of him.
Yeah, and he's still not really that well known. He's been, as it's been said, if it doesn't make the media, it doesn't happen. Well, in a way, it's made the media, but not everybody, thankfully, watches the Lynch station, Fox News. Glenn Beck, it's amazing to me that Glenn Beck has so much credibility. It's astounding. I never would have thought that. But he went out to get Van Jones. And Van Jones has, I tried to actually interview Van Jones about a year or so ago, because he was, as you said, taking the lead in the creation of green jobs and recognizing that by doing so, you attack many of the problems facing this country. We need more environmentally sound, sustainable jobs. People in the cities need jobs. And if you attend to people's economic needs, there's less likely to be as much blind rage, basically, because people are scared when they're living in a difficult situation. People sometimes do radical things. And frankly, I think that would be a good basis for foreign policy. If we go in there and help people develop, help them read, help them get jobs, develop a sustainable economy, probably works a little bit better than bombing the heck out of them and forcing them to turn to people like the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Crazy idea, I know, but...
No, of course, if you really wanted to do something about terrorism, if you wanted to do something about, our security, you would make a huge effort to do good things for people,
Yeah.
Just like you said, in terms of, you know, economic development, education, healthcare, you know, you go at the roots of poverty and
yes.
try to help them. There'd be no interest then in people joining radical fundamentalist groups to, you know, attack this country.
Yeah.
It's not that they're jealous of our lifestyle and attack us. It's they're fed up with the oppression that we have visited on them.
Yes. Well, Van Jones sought to affect our domestic policies. And a little bit of background. Again, not everybody knows who he is. He's got quite a background there. His most recent organization, Green for All, sought to combine environmental progress with, as you say, economic development and jobs targeted to inner cities and especially inner city youth. And he got a job. What was his job that he was just fired from? He got
a
job.
Well, he was, it's interesting about his, how little known he is. I mean, recently Time Magazine had
yes.
picked him as one of the 100 most influential people in the world. And he's still, a marginal figure and probably for most people until this recent controversy. But he was picked by Obama to come into the administration as his advisor on green jobs and innovation. And I think an awful lot of people were extremely excited about that, knowing that, what Van Jones stood for and, which wasn't as Glenn Beck has portrayed and some of his people. He was not a communist. He was not a person who loathed America. He was not trying to, do this country in any way. He wasn't even more mild form, a socialist. I mean, what he was trying to do is rebuild the American economy to reflect sustainable environmental and resource values, so that we would have. That is one of the real crucial things at this particular moment that we're in. I mean, everybody is saying, "Oh, when is the economy going to come back?" What are we going to, as the numbers of unemployment are still rising, as there are more foreclosures, all these big environmental and economic problems. Well, Van Jones believed that, it's not a good idea, particularly, to just get the economy going again if the model we're using is what we were using before, because that model is destroying the earth. And what we need to do is rebuild the economy, yes, but reinvent it as a green economy, as a sustainable economy. And he wasn't just being idealistic and pie in the sky about that. I mean, in his view, and probably quite rightly, that could be done in a very positive way if we were to, direct an enormous amount of energy into alternative energies and conservation and efficiencies and, all these kinds of things that could be producing, thousands, millions of jobs in a positive way for people.
And
so that's what he's all about.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden he was fired he was forced to resign. His resignation was accepted, whatever. He was basically canned by Obama. And Tim Wise of Progressives for Obama was really concerned about the effects of this on the Obama administration. As he says, how do you expect folks to continue to go to the mat for your agenda when you so easily sacrifice our best and brightest at the whim of an illegitimate lynch mob? And we should add that for those who don't know, the subject of lynch mob brings up, real lynching that used to happen in the South against black people, that terrorized black people. And frankly, that terrorism was pretty effective. Van Jones is black, in fact, and he has been that's one of his motivations coming up in the black community to help inner city people and bring them into have a stake in our society. And a participation in this. Do you think, what did Glenn Beck do, basically? What do you know about that? Probably more than I, because I missed all.
Well, I began to know about it indirectly. My portraits are, besides the book, there's a what I think is a wonderful website, just called Americans Who Tell the Truth, AmericansWhoTellTheTruth.org, where you can see 140 of these portraits. And there's a section on the website where people can write in comments, in any form about any subject or ask questions. And I began a month or so ago to receive just hate mail about Van Jones. You know, people not identifying themselves usually, but just saying to me that, how come you haven't told the real story about who this person is, Van Jones, that he's a communist, he's a, he's trying to bring down America, he's doing all these terrible, it just went on and on and on. And I, a couple came in, and I'm not surprised. I mean, I get a lot of stuff like that. But then it was building in momentum and getting more vociferous and vicious. And I thought, something is really going on here. It was then that I began to hear that these people that I was, were I guess they were, listening to Glenn Beck and then going to the internet and finding Van Jones' portrait in my site. And then, I don't know if they were directed in any way to me, or they just happened to find it and then set about attacking Van Jones, trying to discredit not only him, but of course my project also. I mean, some of the attacks were directed right at me. But, there's something exceedingly important here about what you just said is Obama's relationship. I mean, first, it was very encouraging that Obama had brought Van Jones into the administration. I think
yes.
There were a lot of people, progressive people, who were thought that maybe that was a mistake for Van Jones to go into the administration, because he was so effective organizing his policies on the outside. And there were people who were concerned that if he got on the inside, it actually might just disappear, that he would not have a voice anymore, and many of his views would be compromised. And, of course, that was probably what was happening. But I think what was really behind Glenn Beck's attack was, only sort of tangentially interested in Van Jones. I mean, what he's really interested in is a lot of these sort of rabid Republicans is attacking Obama. And if he could use Van Jones as a leak, a weak link, in a sense, to attack Obama and force Obama to hang him out to dry, Van Jones,
right. That
would, be another way to hit Obama. I think that had a lot to do with it.
We are talking with Robert Shetterly of the thing is called, Americans Who Tell the Truth, which is not always an easy thing to do. Some of the heroes here about Van Jones, who he is. It's been sort of lost in the shuffle a little bit, but as was said actually today by Michael Kieschnick, I hope I pronounced that right, on Alternate, he said, the country has lost a powerful advocate. But I'd like a reaction to this. He says, the White House has revealed itself as a weakling and easily intimidated by a mere television pundit.
Yeah.
And he says, it's important for progressives to understand the Van Jones episode, for it speaks volumes about how the right-wing media echo machine works. But there's a lot of concern about what happened to Obama. Green jobs have been high on Obama's agenda for precisely the reasons Van Jones gave. What happened to Obama? Why did President Obama not do more to protect Van Jones? And what does this say about the Obama presidency?
Well, it's hard to know exactly what it, all the ramifications of what it might say. What we do know is just what you said, that he, had this terrific, brilliant, unideological man in his administration who was doing or was able to do and envision all those important things that all of us, not just in this country, but the whole world need for this country to be doing. And he didn't protect him. He let him go. Why? He obviously has caved, and repeatedly. This isn't the first time. It's the first time he's let a person go like this. But on issue after issue involving environmental policy, he has been caving to the interests of big oil, big gas, and big coal, and their lobbying power. I mean, the EPA earlier this year gave permits for 42 more mountains in eastern Kentucky and southern West Virginia to be taken down as part of the, you know, mountaintop removal. And now over 500 mountains of the Appalachians are gone, you know, because that's the cheapest and dirtiest way to get coal these days. And Obama administration has allowed that to happen. Obama, you know, unlike Van Jones, still uses the term clean coal as though there's some possibility of burning coal in a clean way. This is completely, you know, a pipe dream. It will not happen and cannot happen. It's only a means of allowing this country to go on burning coal, which is causing, you know, over a third of all the pollution, you know, the carbon in the atmosphere. You know, this is a crime, basically. And Van Jones was one of the people who, I'm sure, was advising him, you know, to go in a different direction on these things. And, you know, he'd become a liability. It was curious to see Obama last night, and I imagine you watched him talk about health care, because, I mean, there he was, he spoke forcefully, he spoke honestly, it seemed, he spoke powerfully, and particularly at the end, he spoke very morally. And you wonder, how do you square these things? I mean, what was the, it's almost like, okay, I'll give you Van Jones, but then I'll turn around and you're going to have to give me something. You wonder if there was some kind of equation there, some quid pro quo going on. But I don't think so. I mean, you watch the Republicans, the way they shouted at him at times, called him a liar. As soon as he gives up, you know, anyone like Van Jones, I think he shows, you know, a fatal weakness. And the people he's up against here do not want compromise. You know, they want, you know, they want to get him. They want him gone. And so that's, and I think that that's the lesson he's going to have to learn here. And, of course, you're right that other progressive people in the administration are realizing, or will realize, that, you know, he's not going to protect them. He won't have their back.
Yes.
And that is very serious.
And what really is concerning, so many different things about this are disconcerting, is that how did Barack Obama become president? It was because new people got involved, people who really, really, really want change, not just to get rid of the criminal administration of Cheney and Bush. Of course, that was a big part of it. But to turn a corner and to make real change, not just have the same people in power.
Right.
There's no question that certain big businesses have been running the country. And, you know, Congress is, they bend over backwards, kowtow oftentimes to the big businesses, such as you mentioned, the coal industry. They have a tremendous amount of power. And the whole term, as you say, clean coal, it's ridiculous. There's no such thing. And it's very concerning for those of us who worked hard to put Obama in the presidency. Change. We wanted a new direction. And, you know, it's been suggested that Van Jones was handed over to Glenn Beck as an acceptable casualty in the battle for K Street dollars, the almighty buck, the lobbyists. The lobbyists on health care have been spending millions and millions of dollars. They've been buying these ads on TV, which stir up fear. And we know the power of fear. It's tremendously powerful. And it's been getting people out there with frankly, lies about the health care. And, you know, so here's Van Jones handed over as a sacrifice, thrown under the bus, if you will, by the Obama administration so that the lobbyists will still keep the power. I thought Obama was very clear about saying, hey, we're not going to be the same. We're not going to let the K Street lobbyists continue to run Washington. And now look at this.
Yeah, it's hard to know. You know, I mean, people, an awful lot of people have excused a lot of things about Obama, you know, getting into this sort of, well, you know, who is he really? What's really going on? You know, we've got to give him time. We don't know. But, you know, we've all learned that you can't really pay attention to what a person says. You have to pay attention to what they're doing. And what we see is, you know, a complete contradiction of everything that many of us thought, or at least hoped, that this administration would be doing. They're not doing it. And many of the most serious issues, I mean, not that healthcare and the environment aren't two of the most serious issues, but say issues around the wars, you know, they're gone as progressive, you know, issues right now. You know, they've been successfully undermined by, you know, by the Democrats and the progressives themselves saying, oh, well, we need to give this guy time, when that was, you know, those issues around the war were, of course, a primary reason that Obama was elected.
That's right.
And this is, you know, extremely dispiriting to many of us now that, you know, who are trying to keep those issues alive. I mean, because, you know, American foreign policy, you know, not just whether it's illegal or immoral and the people who brought it, you know, those wars should be prosecuted, in terms of the allocation of resources of this country, you know, all of these things that we talk about, whether they're, you know, healthcare or a better environment or better education policy or, you know, all these kinds of things can't happen in the way that we would want them as long as, you know, we're spending billions of dollars a week, you know, fighting these horrible wars. So, I mean, that's another, of course, reason that, I mean, Van Jones is opposed to all of that stuff.
Sure.
And I would, you know, I think that Van Jones is far from gone. I mean, he is not a person who will disappear. And I think that it's actually better, perhaps, that he is where he is now. And because I think that, you know, unlike his ability inside the administration, outside of it, he may be able to begin building some of these model communities as, you know, as examples of what needs to be done. And he can, you know, because he has that, he has the intelligence, he has the charisma, and he has the drive to, you know, use his energy to get these things done anyway, and probably better than they would be, you know, coming out of a very compromised administration.
Yeah, quite possibly. There's been the suggestion that, gee, maybe it wasn't a good thing that he was assigned to the somewhat obscure position of head of, what was it, the Council of, a Council on Environmental Quality, you know, somewhat obscure, special advisor for green jobs at the Council on Environmental Quality, stuck there behind a desk, as has been suggested, kind of with the sock in his mouth, when here's a guy who has a heck of a lot to say, and maybe this will give him more credibility, more progressive presence out there. And, you know, he's a charismatic, strategic leader, and maybe now he can help give direction and set priorities and more generally give shape to the progressive presence in the Obama era. You know, the president showed some courage last night, but I'm remembering during the whole primary battle, and being coming from New Hampshire, we saw a lot of the primary battles, that one of the concerns that was raised about this candidate, Barack Obama, was, well, maybe he's too inexperienced. And most of us, you know, just blew that off and said, look at the guy, he can do things. We've had presidents with experience, and look what terrible things they did. Well, maybe it's showing that he's, part of his personality may be trying to be too much of a uniter, when there was an article in New York Times, wonderful piece a couple of weeks ago, about Franklin Roosevelt, who was clearly a divider. He said, there's many people who have a lot of money at stake who hate me. And he said, basically, I welcome their hate. And he went on and fought, and he was one of the greatest presidents there has been. So I wonder about what this says about the presence of progressives in the Obama era. Is this going to fire us up? You know, during the campaign, Obama would say, fired up, ready to go. Maybe this actually will help. Or does it encourage the Glenn Becks and the wacko extreme right wingers? Are they going to say, okay, they got Van Jones, who will the right target next? What's your reaction to some of those concerns?
Well, I think that it can't help but encourage the Glenn Becks. I mean, they don't, they seem to actually thrive on, you know, any kind of outrageous language and attacks, and
oh, yeah.
You know, whether it's coming at them or coming from them, and the more the merrier. And so when they see, you know, this is just blood in the water for them.
Yeah.
So I think they will be immensely encouraged by this. I mean, there are a lot of liberals and progressives who, you know, tend to play by a different set of rules. And of course, Obama, you know, has stated that. He stated last night. He talks about civility, and he was tough, but he was civil, of course, and,
yes.
Which he should be.
Yes.
But you know, prior to this, he's often sacrificed his toughness to his civility.
Yeah.
And I think now we there's several things that have to go on here. You know, one is that local communities, you know, should not be waiting for Van Jones or Obama or anybody to start building communities, thinking locally about their own housing, energy, transportation, foods, you know, food supply. You know, all of us in our communities, large or small, over this country should be trying to get together to think, you know, how we're going to take care of ourselves. You know, our government is so compromised by, you know, corporate money at every level that, you know, unless the structure of the government is changed substantially, and you know, thinking that they're going to vote themselves out of power is unlikely. We need to be, you know, doing this at the most grassroots level. Now, I wanted to say something about FDR, because you mentioned him, which is, I think, very interesting, and is in complete contrast to Obama and Van Jones. FDR had in his administration a woman named Frances Perkins, who
yes.
was the Secretary of Labor. I've
right.
just painted a portrait of her. It's not up on my website yet, but it will be soon. And, you know, it was all those programs that we got during the New Deal in terms of Social Security and protection, you know, minimum wage and workplace protections and, you know, all right, you know, unionizing and everything. Those were largely Frances Perkins' ideas. They were not FDR's ideas. You know, he protected her and stood behind her. There was, an attempt in Congress to impeach her. You know, they didn't go that far with Van Jones, but that's what they wanted to do with Frances Perkins. They, you know, all the same kinds of criticisms were made about her. Besides, she was the first woman ever in a cabinet, which was, you know, incredibly sexist. And she, you know, also had an enormous amount of, you know, family problems, and all kinds of stuff was going on. FDR stayed with her. She was one of only two cabinet people who stayed, you know, all through four administrations. It was an extraordinary time, and you know, just, you know, completely unlike what happened with Obama and Van Jones. FDR protected her at every turn. You know, she was attacked and attacked and attacked. The only thing that she wanted for the New Deal and all those programs, which she didn't get, was universal health care. And it was, you know, the same deal then. But, of course, it was mostly doctors then who attacked and fought against it. They didn't want their ability to, you know, make money compromised. But it's just interesting parallel, or not parallel,
right.
that we're looking
contrast,
at there.
Unfortunately.
In terms of a president protecting the people who they often, the president himself, herself, you know, has to, you know, project a, you know, this sort of centrist view or a more accommodating view, but
right.
they have to, you know, protect those people who are the real heart and soul of the morality of an administration and of the conscience of the administration. And Frances Perkins was that for FDR, and Van Jones, you know, really could have been that for Obama.
Yes, and it does seem that one of the basic issues in the whole healthcare debate, and parenthetically, if you talk about improvements in health, pollution, hello, you know, emissions from coal and things like that causes tremendous pollution and health problems. Really, the environment is a health issue, and particularly African Americans have been victimized by kind of environmental racism by the big companies that go in there, and where do they locate their polluting facilities? In poor black neighborhoods, in indigenous American areas. It's the areas of poverty where the most pollution goes on. And I do believe Van Jones understood that. And standing
up... Right. I mean, think for a second. I mean, I painted a portrait of Majora Carter, who started the Sustainable South Bronx movement, where most of New York's garbage and pollution is centered. But she is now working with Judy Bonds in southern West Virginia, realizing that this isn't just about race. It's really about class and money.
Yep.
I mean, in West Virginia, it's mostly white people who are being victimized, poor white people, by this mountaintop removal. I mean, think if the coal companies wanted to take down the Catskills, for coal, how far would they get with that? It's the
Adirondacks.
The poor people who are victimized, where they think they can get away with it, and they do get
they
away
do.
With it.
They
absolutely.
And one of the things about this whole healthcare issue, what the struggle really is who is the government serving? Is it serving the same old, huge, huge corporation, very big business, as my occasional guest Adele Stan calls it, oils and the other industries, insurance industries and others that paid for the tea parties and disruptions at town hall? Or are we going to have real change? And that is what people voted for. They didn't vote for the status quo, for maintaining the lobbyists. Who is the government working for? And maybe Van Jones was at the head of that. And the powers that be, the very big business, just couldn't stand there. Couldn't stand that. And there's a lack of change here. And it's very amazing, really, what things were said about Van Jones. It reminds me of the rights fears in the late 1960s, early 70s, the fears about black militancy. What they said back then about Martin Luther King and Ralph Abernathy and John Lewis and Fannie Lou Hamer, they were communists, revolutionaries, a danger to the republic. These are the kind of things they've said about Van Jones, which brings up the question of the watermelon hypothesis.
Well, certainly. I mean, there's this funny mixture of a throwback to both red baiting and race baiting that's going on here with Van Jones. And I guess one of the things that's so curious and disturbing is how, I mean, I think a lot of us thought we were beyond that. I mean, that we had, this was not something that could be easily used in this country anymore. I mean, is communism, a threat to the United States today? I mean, get serious. I think it would be hard put for most people in this country, especially the ones who are attacking Van Jones as a communist, to even, say, well, what does a communist really want? What danger does a communist pose to this country? And the answer is, well, one, he isn't a communist, but two, what difference would it make? Van Jones is concerned with is the common good. And if
that proves it.
That is the problem. That is what they're really after.
Exactly.
Someone who is, there is a sense in which, and I think, people know it, is the resources and the wealth of this country, needs to be reallocated and spread, in a more, equitable way.
And that's what people voted for.
And that's what they thought. I think people thought they were voting for. Yeah. That's what maybe one thing that Van Jones is about, and that's of course the way, the corporate world who stands to benefit from all this stuff. I mean, not in the long term, but only in the short term.
Exactly.
That's why they would, be complicit in trying to bring this man down.
And we are talking with Robert Shetterly, who is a painter and author, painted a series of portraits, Americans Who Tell the Truth. And I mentioned the watermelon hypothesis. And of course, there's no racist intent in that characterization, I'm sure. But the idea of a watermelon is that, it's green on the outside, but communist red to the core. those are things that Beck actually talked about. He said that cap and trade, which many of us feel isn't nearly enough, is you know, green on the outside, but communist red on the inside. It's pretty amazing. But I wonder in what ways Van Jones did, at least was perceived as threatening the corporate power over the real power of this country. I wonder which corporate powers were actually threatened and what involvement they may have had in throwing Van Jones under the bus.
Well, it'd be interesting to know because, I mean, if you take Van Jones seriously, as we should, and what he really wanted in terms of, or not just wanted, I mean, we shouldn't talk about him in the past tense. I think he's going to
be
incredibly effective still, perhaps more so, is totally threatening to the corporate structure of this country. I mean, he's talking about, you know, revitalizing the economy, but a different economy, where there are different players and they are, you know, making, you know, their income off of, you know, not the kind of economic, you know, quote, progress, unquote, that we have seen in the past, which is all about resource depletion. And that's where this, you know, a lot of these big, you know, when you're talking about oil or gas or coal, you know, one of the things that they see as we all are getting concerned about peak oil and these running out of these things, they see scarcity as an enormous boost to their profits. And
sure,
that's not a problem to them, the scarcity. It's a bonus.
That's true.
And as we, you know, it's kind of a brinkmanship we're playing here with, well, how low can these, you know, how scarce can these things come before we try to shift to some other kind of energy? Well, they're, I think, quite willing to let it go and go and go because their profits will go up and up and up. And that's, you know, Van Jones, of course, was, you know, totally against that. And they're talking about a total reorganization of the way we do business in the world.
Yep.
So he is very threatening to them, and he should be. And that's, I'm sure, you know, behind all the name-calling, you know, communist and socialist and, you know, racist and the things they said about him, it's really these radical, you know, I'm putting that in quotes, economic ideas which got him in trouble.
And it does seem to me that a lot of the people who came with the best of intentions to the Tea Party events and have been so afraid, very, very fearful, have been people who, frankly, have gotten screwed by the system, who haven't had the power. I mean, the founders of this country, clearly, they had their differences amongst them, but they felt like we needed self-government. This had to be a government, quaint as it seems, of, by, and for the people. Well, it's become more of a plutocracy of, by, and for the very wealthy, and they feel threatened. People want that change. The people who are being used by the right now, again, with the best of intentions, I think, for the most part, they're concerned about government not serving them, but serving the same old powers. And I think to divide and conquer is, frankly, a strategy that's worked pretty well through the years, through not just the United States, but many different countries. And they've been pretty effective at creating straw men to whack down, and this is one here. I wonder how much of a blow the, you know, by Obama just not standing by him, by no members of Congress that I heard standing by Van Jones, by basically everybody sort of putting their head down and paying no attention to the sacking of Van Jones. How much of a blow is this to progressives who put Obama in the White House? Or do you expect, I mean, Van Jones is clearly not going to drop from sight. I wonder what can happen now. What do you think may happen? Do you think
I don't think it's, you know, I really don't, Bert, I really don't think it's a blow to progressives in a sense. I mean, I think it's a wake-up call to progressives. That they, I mean, there are an awful lot of people who've been giving Obama the benefit of the doubt, and I think that this is a moment in which they can, you know, more of them will finally see that, you know, as a person who has gone to the helm of you know, this government, that just by almost by definition, he becomes compromised.
I suppose.
And you know, the big battles ahead of us, if we're going to, you know, in terms of environment and war and peace and economy and things like that, are going to be, you know, fought from the outside. And we have to, you know, not expect that, you know, this elected government, whether Republicans or Democrats, are going to give us, you know, the leadership and the models that we need for a sustainable society. Instead, we're going to have to provide them, you know, from the outside, and then make those models the thing that probably through a third party, which people will want to vote for. You know, we can't just keep protesting against this and say, you know, oh, give us what we want. They're not going to give us what we want. And I hope that that is one of the lessons that progressives learn from Van Jones here. And also, you know, what's going on with health care. I mean, Obama appeared, you know, tough and courageous last night, presenting, you know, a public option,
right,
healthcare that might be as much, in which he had to, you know, show how, you know, give it its credence by talking about how little it would be, you know, only 5% of the healthcare market. Well, what, you know, progressives want, and what I think most people realize what we actually need here is a single player thing.
Yes, of course.
You know, that is going to really fly in the face of a system of healthcare that's run for profit rather than for people. And, you know, we're not really being given that. And we've got to, you know, stop exulting over getting crumbs, you know, because crumbs will not save us. We've got to, you know, develop these models of sustainable behavior and moral behavior and decent social policy, and then insist on them, you know.
And it's true, you know, change always comes from the bottom up. And I know there are a lot of people who, you know, people get busy, they have their jobs to do, families, et cetera, et cetera. And, oh, we got Obama in, it's over, we won, goodbye, next issue. Doesn't quite work that way. And here, maybe this is the silver lining of this gray cloud, is that, we got to keep it up. We got to continue to fight for single-payer health care. We have to fight for a government that serves the common good, you know,
right.
And that's so radical, the common good. People have really come to accept that when they talk about freedom, what they really mean is freedom by the big corporations to continue to own the government and to have it serve them. One thing we have to touch on here that Glenn Beck had a field day with, the whole 9/11 truther thing.
Yeah.
What my understanding, and I don't know that much about Van Jones' participation or lack thereof, that Van Jones signed some document, and then it was changed after he signed it, and he was appalled by the final product. What do you know about this whole 9/11 business that really seemed to have tripped him up? And maybe this is a reason, the whole 9/11 conspiracy stuff, that frankly does get a little bit nuts from time to time. Maybe this is why so many members of Congress just ducked away from it, because they didn't want any part of defending a guy who signed some 9/11 statement.
Well, this is a curious issue and a very important one. And I don't know, frankly, what the truth of this is in regard to Van Jones. I mean, I don't know what he thought he was signing and whether it was changed afterwards or not. I mean, I know, at least I think I know myself, that many of the most important questions about 9/11 have not been answered. And, you know, there's an enormous amount of evidence, both personal observation, witnessing, and also scientific evidence about 9/11 and what happened to both the planes, the buildings, et cetera, that doesn't fit the official story.
And what could be wrong with
it? As far as I know, Van Jones was asking, signed a petition that, either initially or later, said there are at least questions about government complicity that need to be answered. As far as I can see, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But, of course, there are an awful lot of politicians, including Obama, who are terrified of that issue. And they do not want it talked about. And they don't, I mean, talk about a can of worms. Now, from a my point of view, until this country opens all those cans of worms and about the assassinations and things like 9/11 and actually seeks the truth, you know, we're living in a kind of deep hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And we, you know, it actually harms us enormously because, you know, you can't have a functioning democracy when there's all this secrecy and denied information about who we really are.
And Cheney certainly knew that. Vice President Cheney, or maybe he was really President Cheney, knew that secrets are very, very important to a dictatorial government.
Right.
So what is wrong with looking into it? If you look into things about the assassinations, so many things, just honestly look into it. If there's nothing to hide, what harm can there be?
Exactly. It's very suspicious. Well, you know, I one of the things that I talk about a lot and feel more comfortable talking about because it's all in the open, at least it should be, was, you know, the assassination of King. You know, in 1999, a jury in Memphis determined that the assassination of Martin Luther King was not James Earl Ray. It was a conspiracy that involved the Memphis police, the mafia, the special forces of the U.S. Army, and the FBI. And they had confessions from people in every one of those organizations. This information, even though it was a jury trial and was, you know, an award of $100 was given to the King family because they brought this suit because they wanted James Earl Ray's name cleared, is completely denied in this country. I mean, the media didn't report it. Nobody talks about it. If you bring it up, you're still, even though it's a jury trial with a verdict, you're still thought of as a conspiracy nut, even to talk about it. There is enormous pressure in this country not to talk about, I mean, here we celebrate King every year, but we never talk about the fact that it was our own government that killed him.
Well, we also don't talk about the fact that, well, maybe one of the reasons he was killed is because he was getting more and more powerful in his opposition to the war in Vietnam.
Oh, absolutely. And he was going to bring this, you know, Poor People's March to Washington. It was going to be hugely embarrassing.
See, that's the problem. The truth shall make you free. Can't have that.
Well, that's a very important thing, you know. And the other thing about the truth, I mean, one reason I call my series of portraits Americans That Tell the Truth is because, you know, unless you face the truth of these problems, whether we're talking about, you know, climate change or war or any big policy, you can't fix it.
That's right.
And, of course, one of the things about not facing the truth tells you or should tell you is that somebody doesn't want it fixed.
That's right. There are those interests, those powerful interests who remain powerful, clearly, who don't want it fixed.
Absolutely not.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thanks, Bert. It was great to talk with you.
Oh, very much enjoyable. How can people, I'd love to see some of your portraits, Americans Who Tell the Truth. I trust there must be some way to access it on that magical mystery thing called the Internet.
No, it is. It's just AmericansWhoTellTheTruth.org, and you can go through 150 or 140 portraits. You can read biographies. I keep a journal there. There's a curriculum for teachers that's free. We're about to add a whole lot more information in terms of curricular work for both students and teachers. And there's a place to write to me and suggest other people I should paint and comment about what's going on. What I'm trying to do is not about history, is that it's so much about role models and building citizenship. I mean, we can't have a democracy without engaged citizens. That's the main, I think, lesson of all this.
Sounds like a radical. Thank you so much.
I sound like a citizen to me.
Absolutely, a citizen. Citizens are not just consumers. They participate in their own government. Thank you so much, Robert Shetterly, for being with us today on Portside. And when we're talking about Van Jones, well, why can't you finish what you started? Another Van Halen.
One, two. Thanks, Bert.
Thank
One,
you.
Two.
Wow. So come